When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It's the top of the week, so before we lead into episodes, we like to catch up with each other, and most importantly, you, fellow conspiracy realist, about news that didn't quite get the attention it deserves, or news that was sort of below the fold, to use the old school journalist speak. We're going to learn about a small business owner in Canada who has a little bit of legal trouble and perhaps a larger scheme. We're going to learn about some groundbreaking Gattaca level stuff, which we always told you was on the way sooner than you think. And before we do any of that, we're gonna travel to my hometown of Nashville, Tennessee, to a hotel that I guess, not to shame anybody, but I don't think any of us want to visit there.
I don't know.
Nashville?
I'm interested.
No, the hotel.
Oh, the hotel. Okay, I was about to say, I'm literally going to Nashville tomorrow, so like, what am I
well,
missing here? Okay,
well, Noel, yeah. We've got good news for you and a little bit of story that's ripped right from season 4 of 13 Days of Halloween, which is coming back this October, by the way, so get your ears prepared for that. We're going to travel today to 121 4th Avenue South in Nashville, Tennessee. It's the perfect place, you guys, to build and operate a large 4-star hotel. A very specific hotel, the Hilton Nashville Downtown. Across the street to the north, you're going to find Robert's Western World.
I love it. It's the best place in the whole wide world. It's my favorite honky-tonk on the strip.
I knew you were going to say that, Noel, and it is one of the greatest places, but it's right across the street from this location. To the east, you'll find the Johnny Cash Museum. To the south, the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum. And to the west, and I think this is really messed up and strange and funny for this episode, the Bridgestone Arena, home of the NHL's Nashville Predators.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see why that is funny to me in just a moment. So let's imagine that all of us, you especially, have an extra $250 to $350 to spend nightly at a 4-star hotel while you're visiting Nashville, Tennessee. And for that price, my goodness, you'd expect to feel quite at ease, at home even, when you head back to your room at night. You close that door, those hotel doors that lock up so nicely, and get a little shut-eye. Well, today we're going to travel back to the early hours of Thursday, March 30th, around 5 a.m. Central Time. And we're going to put you in a little scenario here. So imagine you're in this nice, lovely hotel. Imagine that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you're awakened in your bed. It's dark. At first, you're not sure what's going on, but there's a strange feeling. You can't tell what it is quite yet. Your foot.
I feel it in my fingers. Oh, wait, it's in my toes.
Yes.
Just setting the scene.
Your foot feels wet. You hear movement at the end of your bed and you freeze. You know that feeling like, oh, crap, what is going on? Then you realize it. Someone else is in your room and they're actively sucking on your toes.
God, not the notorious Nashville toe sucker.
So you kick your legs violently, throw off the covers, you spring out of bed, hit the nearest light switch, and you do realize in that moment there is definitely a man in your room and he was sucking your toes. But then you realize that you recognize this dude. He was in your room yesterday helping to fix your TV in there. It's David, the hotel's night manager. Whoa. I know this sounds like a nightmare scenario, and it is. It really is. This is what allegedly happened to a man named Peter Brennan on that day, March 30th. Guys, so anyway, anything like this ever happened to y'all?
No, but you know what it sounds like? Yeah. It's like the lyric of that Tenacious D song where it's like, then you feel something down by your feet. It's me. It's KG. I'm sucking up on your toes, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's
only that's sort of, I guess, consensual, maybe, but this is sexual assault, what you're describing. This is horrific. Bad times, not the fodder for comedy songs at all.
To answer your question, Matt, yeah, I have been in situations where I was staying in a hostel, a hotel, or a private domicile, and someone did enter with the idea that they... thankfully, there was not physical contact of an assumedly sexual nature, but yeah, you have to be careful. You know, it's not uncommon that someone might try to enter a place when you're in a vulnerable position, usually for a robbery or something like that. But I would 10-10 prefer to fend off an attempted robbery than wake up with a very vulnerable part of my body in a stranger's mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. The toes. No bueno. Very vulnerable. Not cool. So let's tell you, at least according to the Metropolitan Nashville Police Department, what happened. They said that according to David Neal, the night manager there, he created a card the way you would create a card for any guest at a hotel. You know, you just put it through the little machine there. It gets coded for a specific door. He made one of those, then entered the guest room around 5 a.m. and according to him, it's because he smelled fire and he needed to go and check the room and the potential victim of a fire. Okay. He, however, did not report the issue to security, and there were no other reports from anyone in the hotel about the smell of smoke. When David Neal was asked where the key was that he used to enter Peter's room, he said that he had thrown it away and it was not recovered by anyone.
Which is also not standard operating procedure.
No, none of that really is. Nope. So anyway, this guy ended up being hauled away to jail and his bail was set at $27,000. You can find a picture of Neal. Ben, you shared with us a picture of Neal that you found on Twitter.
Yeah, a picture of the accused made the rounds on social media and took the story viral. But I think, Matt, you have a lot of details that were missing from the discourse on Twitter.
Well, sure. We can go to reporting from WSMV, a local NBC affiliate out there in Nashville and Wilson County, where this occurred. And they have information on this person, David Neal. Apparently, not that long ago, I guess it is a while ago, 1997, David Neal was found guilty of voluntary manslaughter for killing his roommate. And you can, and through this reporting, you know, you can read about it. He killed his roommate allegedly after some kind of altercation, a long night of fighting, basically, that turned into a dangerous situation. And according to David Neal, he was forced to go into his bedroom, take out a gun, and shoot his roommate multiple times, killing him. And you can find through casetext.com State versus Neal. And you can find this. It was posted January 18th, 2000, or like at least that's when this was created. And you can read the, I guess, the statement from David Neal about what had happened, the entire thing there, which just feels a little strange. It makes me feel like it's even more suspect now, knowing these actions that he took after he got out of prison and, you know, got a job as a night manager there at that very nice Hilton Hotel. Mm-hmm. It's just very strange to me, I guess, that you could deal with something like that, right? Killing someone in your home who happens to be your roommate with a gun, get charged with voluntary manslaughter after you admit to killing this person, go to prison for a while, get out, and then, I guess, be in charge of a large hotel like that. That's a bit strange to me, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. And it was also strange to Peter, the man whose toes got sucked, because now he is suing. He is suing, I believe, the Hilton itself for hiring this person as a night manager.
Yeah, I saw somewhere that his legal representatives are saying he suffered from, quote, severe and permanent emotional distress, embarrassment, past and future medical expenses, plus a loss of earning capacity, which, I mean, it sounds maybe hyperbolic to some people, but consider all the health risk involved, you know, consider whether or not this guy is going to be able to sleep comfortably in any hotel for a while. You know what I mean? And it makes sense that he would, I mean, again, we're not lawyers, but it makes sense that he would take legal action against Hilton as well, because they're the ones who hired him and put him in that position of responsibility, right?
Yeah. According to that same WSMV reporting, I'm going to read from an article titled "Nashville Hotel Employee Who Snuck in the Hotel's Room Previously Convicted of Manslaughter, Lawyers Say." They've got information from Peter Brennan's lawyers. I'm going to read verbatim a bit from this. Brennan's lawyers were told that the hotel employee was fired from the hotel because he refused to give a statement regarding this alleged occurrence of assault and breaking into somebody's room. They are currently, at least when this was written on the 4th of May this year, they're waiting on surveillance footage from the hotel to confirm, you know, the whereabouts of Brennan and his movements that evening. And just to add a little bit more, here's a quote from Brennan, quote, "I just feel like Hilton has not been helpful or forthcoming whatsoever, and I don't know why, but it's very disconcerting." And he went on to say that the hotel's management alleged this lack of cooperation that Peter Brennan is alleging makes him concerned for all future guests of the establishment.
I mean, that all sounds spot on to me. Those are very reasonable things. Additionally, we know one of the articles, it's gone out through a couple of different articles. I know CBS News did hear back from a representative of the Hilton, right? And they're already cauterizing the wound. They said that, quote, "Hilton Nashville downtown is independently owned and operated by a third party. No Hilton entity employs staff at this property, aka this is not our burden."
So weird. So weird, yeah. The way that works. Sometimes you got to just borrow that name, slap it on a hotel, right?
One day off air, I'll tell you guys about how I ended up in a place that was definitely not a Days Inn, but called itself Days Inn and had apparently gotten in so much trouble, they had a little placard that said they were legally required to notify me they were not affiliated with Days Inn. They were like a Days Inn, but not the Days Inn.
You get it.
Well, yeah. So is that pretty standard? Like, you know, when there's a franchise of any large corporation, like they are indemnified, like it's entirely the burden is on the franchise holder. And the actual corporation is no longer in any way, you know, in the line of fire, legally speaking.
I guess it would be the people who actually operate the hotel, you know. And in this case, this is one of the higher level people at the hotel at that time. Mm. Need to speak to your manager.
Yeah. Right. Huh? Someone in the position to clone a key to give refunds, you know, to comp rooms, which I guess many, you know, this makes me think, Matt, it might be interesting for us to do an episode on stuff hotels don't want you to know.
Hey, that's a good episode. Let's do that for sure. Definitely. All right. Well, there's not much else to add here, guys. Just horrifying in my mind. At least nobody got hurt except psychologically, mentally, physically, PTSD. Oh, no. Some Peter got hurt for sure. And now I'm never going to fall asleep in a hotel room unless it's like triple locked. Okay. We're going to hear a word from our sponsor. We'll be right back with more strange news.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
And we're back with another piece of strange news. And this is one that on the surface might just seem like a real kooky fella trying to skirt the law and do something to make some headlines. Okay. So in Vancouver, Canada, we've reported on this in the past, they have some pretty progressive drug laws. You may have seen it reported as Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia legalizes all hard drugs. And well, that's not entirely the case. They have decriminalized possession of up to 2.5 grams of opioids, crack cocaine, powder cocaine, methamphetamine, and MDMA. Heroin is not included on the list that I have here in front of me, but I do believe opioids. So that would be included in opioids. This is a decriminalization policy that kicked in January over there in British Columbia. What was not part of this was the sale and distribution of said narcotics. But there is a man in Vancouver who is trying to not necessarily change. Well, yeah, big picture, change that. Jerry Martin, a 51-year-old man, recently opened a shop called The Drugs Store. Operating out of a mobile, like kind of, you know, food truck type situation. The drugs store offered, or the idea was that you could buy up to 2.5 grams of all of the aforementioned substances. The key here being that they were all of the stuff that Jerry was peddling there had been tested for purity, that he was, you know, giving a guarantee of purity, and more, most importantly, lack of adulterants. And when we're talking about adulterants, we're not only talking about things that are used to increase the weight of a product while decreasing the actual, you know, narcotics contained therein, but we're talking about horrible things, things like fentanyl, things that are killing people, specifically in British Columbia. And, you know, especially since this decriminalization stuff kicked in, a lot of overdose deaths, because the drugs are decriminalized, that does not mean that people are getting them from more reputable, for lack of a better word, sources. They're still getting them from the same networks of black market drug dealers who are getting them from who knows where, and whose purity levels and adulterant levels are completely TBD. There actually is a place that has been open in British Columbia for some time where you can test your drugs. It is literally called, I think it's just literally called Test Your Drugs Here or something to that. Yeah, Get Your Drugs Tested is the name. It is a free, I guess, not really a clinic, but it is a lab. It's a very small kind of storefront next to what appears to be a coffee shop on a main drag there in Vancouver, where you can take your drugs that you've purchased on the street and get them tested for free. And a guy named Dana Larson, who is a cannabis and drug policy reform activist, started this place. And the idea being that, you know, it would reduce overdose deaths and, frankly, just deaths from people that are being poisoned by stuff that's in their drugs. Because a lot of what's considered overdose deaths is kind of semantic, I guess. But, you know, they're not necessarily overdosing on the drug they think they're buying. They're overdosing on something that's put into the drug, or they're just outright being poisoned. So back to Martin. He, I actually heard an interview with him with the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Company, where he was asked by a journalist, why was he doing this? Why, you know, put himself in the line of fire? Because as we said, not legal to sell this stuff out of a storefront. And when asked why he was doing this, Martin said, well, he had lost two brothers to drug-related activities, one of whom died because of violence associated with a drug deal, and one who overdosed recently or died recently due to an accidental overdose. He blames this on the fact that, you know, despite drugs being decriminalized, folks can't really depend on what they're getting. And if they're not taking it upon themselves, or if they're not educated properly to, you know, get the drugs tested, or to, you know, make sure they're being incredibly safe in terms of their use. I mean, no drug use is safe, but we know that, you know, there are things that you can keep on hand, like the drug that can revive you, Narcan, exactly, that can revive someone in the event of an accidental overdose. And so when he was talking to the CBC, he cites these reasons that he is doing this, and he was just recently, as of the time of this recording, I think it was just a couple of days ago, he was arrested. Just a couple of days after his shop opened for business. And when he spoke to the CBC, he essentially implied that this was part of the plan, that by getting arrested, by putting himself out there, he could become the beginning of a new conversation. Okay, so obviously the drug policies there in British Columbia are incredibly liberal, let's just say, or progressive. But he's saying that that policy doesn't really go far enough. Like, it's one thing to not, to not persecute drug users and get them into the prison system, but it's another thing to actually employ policies that help save their lives. And he hopes, and the activist that I mentioned earlier, who had the Test Your Drugs facility, they believe that this is accurate. This could potentially open that conversation up, and with given the government's position already, possibly lead to some further examination of, you know, all of this. And guys, I mean, I want to hear y'all's take on this, but it reminds me of things that you hear about, like in places where certain drugs are a real problem, where there will be things like needle exchanges, where, you know, rather than using sharing needles, potentially getting bloodborne illnesses, you know, and diseases that can kill you, you can actually exchange your dirty needles for clean ones. And there are some on certain sides of the debate that think that's too much. That's like, we shouldn't be helping, quote unquote, these people, you know, who I would argue have a legitimate condition. You know, drug addiction is something that it can be treated and should be treated as a disease in and of itself. So I don't know. This is interesting stuff to me. And I think in a lot of ways, very brave move for this fellow to put himself out there like that in the name of trying to move the, you know, policy forward.
Yeah, it is really interesting to me, Noel. The statements put out by the government there in British Columbia about decriminalization is not the same as legalizing, right? Because you're talking about the possession of drugs when you're talking about decriminalization versus the trafficking of drugs, which is why it's still
distribute.
Yeah, that's why it's still legal. When it comes to harm reduction and things, remember when we had the host of Psychoactive on, and he was talking a lot about some of the things that can be done to reduce harm, right?
I'm really glad you used the term harm reduction as well. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what he preaches, right? Ethan Nadelman. Ethan Nadelman has spent decades looking at that very thing, harm reduction. And, you know, there are a lot of very intelligent people out there trying to figure out how to actually enact these kinds of practices in cities across the world. How do you actually effectively do that? Allow people to safely take drugs, but also attempt to help people get out of addictive behaviors and get off of addictive substances. It's not an easy thing. That's why we haven't solved it yet, right? But I do like this person's, I don't know what you call it, gusto?
Moxie. No.
Yeah, whatever it is.
I'm with you on that, Matt. The 'cause when I was originally reading about this story, one of my questions, and this occurs to some of our more cynical audience members as well, is, was this his intention going in? Right. Or was the, I feel like it must have been, because you would know, obviously, that this would eventually lead to legal problems. It hopefully will spark a larger conversation, because one thing that I find somewhat problematic about the personal responsibility argument that is foisted so often, or hoisted rather, is the idea that someone in the grips of addiction, right, needing a substance, will stop long enough, will delay the ingestion long enough to say, hey, let me go across town to get a safety check, or hey, let me vet this provider of this thing. So if we're treating addiction as an illness, which it is, rather than a crime, then the most efficient and the most efficacious way to address that is to make it easier to be safe. And it, unfortunately, it doesn't get the votes. I would imagine what we're looking at is the quarreling of multiple addictions. The politicians making these laws are addicted to power. They're addicted to easy votes just as much as someone may be addicted to a drug. And so, of course, they're not going to be incentivized in many cases to actually help the people. Now, would that change if there was a large voting block of people who thought of addiction this way, or if there was a large voting block of people who were addicted in some substance or in recovery? I would say yes. But to your question, Matt, your excellent question, why isn't this getting fixed? I think it's because the system as it exists now is incentivized to continue the punitive approach rather than the rehabilitative approach.
Yeah. I mean, certainly that's the case in the United States. I 100% agree. And I think probably to a lesser degree, the case in Canada as well. The thing that's interesting here too is Martin's lawyer, Paul Lewin, said that this was his intent from the start and that he has a whole constitutional argument ready to go if and now when he gets criminally charged. Well, he hasn't been criminally charged yet. He's been
detained. You know, and his business has been shut down, which of course was not operating with a, certainly not operating with a, a legal business license. But this is what his lawyer, Paul Lewin, had to say. If Mr. Martin is charged with selling controlled substances, it is his intention to challenge the constitutionality of those laws. And the laws we're talking about are Section 7 of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is what decriminalized possession of narcotics. He goes on, he would allege that laws that prevent a safe supply and result in death by poisoning contravene Section 7 of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and must be struck down because, and this is from reporting in Vice, that's reporting on quite a few other sources, including statements from Martin and his lawyer. Has this to say, Section 7 of the Charter states that all Canadians have, quote, the right to life, liberty, and security of the person, and the right not to be deprived thereof except in accordance with principles of fundamental justice. Now, forgive me, this Section 7 is obviously just more of a constitutional thing. This is not specifically language from the act that legalized or rather decriminalized possession of certain controlled substances. So he is arguing that by decriminalizing the controlled substances, they are essentially not – they're talking out of two sides of their mouths. They're saying, yeah, it's okay to possess this, but we're also not going to do anything to make sure that you are able, you know, given the new law, to be guaranteed that life, liberty, and security of the person. Yeah, and it says not to be deprived thereof except in accordance with the principles of fundamental justice. So, interesting. I think it's an interesting maneuver.
I figured it out, guys. I figured out the problem. I know how to fix it. Here we go. You ready? We're heading towards some form of universal income because none of us are going to have jobs anymore because the machines are going to run everything, right? This is inevitable. Okay. We all know this.
Sure. Eventually, I want to pause it again, not to interrupt, but to interject, Matt, because I think my spidey sense tells me where you're going. The post-work economy will eventually exist, but it's going to be a post-worker economy first. And UBI, the current models of it, they're not ready. But anyway,
none of this is ready. None of this is even real. I'm joking to a large extent, just putting this out there. What if there were incentives to not do drugs in you get more money if when you get drug tested or whatever, you have no cocaine in your system, you have no heroin or opioids in your system, you have no marijuana incentives in your system, and you get it's a tiered system where you get more and more money on that universal income thing the fewer and fewer vices that you have. Whoa, dude, we can do this.
What about the lower your likelihood of certain genetic diseases? That's the slope it slips into.
Yeah, 100%. That's a good point, Ben. That is a good point. Your thinking is in the right place there.
There's
something to that, I would argue. But again, then that starts to other people who are, you know, perhaps more predisposed to have these kinds of, proclivities towards substance abuse. So I know we're
not trying to other anyone.
I know you're not. I'm just saying, like, it is a slippery slope. But if you're giving someone a benefit because they're not afflicted with something that, you know, you could argue is either genetic or learned, then it doesn't really look like an even playing field. But I do think there's something to that in a way as well. And I think you're asking the right questions in terms of, you know, incentivizing and how do you, I think the most important part about that, at the very least, is education and giving people the resources they need if they really want to get clean, you know, to help them do that, whether that be through counseling or, I mean, obviously we know things like rehab are prohibitively expensive and it's just nearly out of reach for a lot of people. And then you hear about people of means who do it like a bunch of times and still can't kick the habit.
I just want to take a second to note Shadow Bernays here. My take, my unsolicited take, is that the way to address these things is through not just financial pressure, which you're onto something there, Matt, even as a thought experiment. It's social dynamic pressure. The reason cigarettes worked is because they were made to look cool. So you just make something else look cool. Bernays was right. Propaganda and crystallizing public opinion are free to read online right now. I yield my time.
And also, by the way, Ben, you're takes are always solicited. That is the whole nature of the show. And I think that is a very, very good one. And the last thing I'll add, though, is when it comes to the responsibility of the government, you know, to its citizens, whether it be in Canada or the United States, is, you know, in Canada and elsewhere, you know, we're hearing about things like heroin being tainted with fentanyl, which we know it takes a very, very small amount to be fatal. But not only is the heroin being tainted with fentanyl, the fentanyl's being tainted with benzodiazepines, which are things like Xanax and, you know, Ativan, maybe. I forget, but there's certain ones that are anti-anxiety medications, and they're not opioids. They are benzodiazepines. They're more like tranquilizers, kind of. And it's created a whole new drug that's being referred to as benzodope. And so when people are taking heroin that's laced with fentanyl, that's laced with benzodiazepines, they're much more likely to black out, to open themselves up to being sexually assaulted or robbed or, you know, injured in ways that would be much worse than if they were just high on the drug they thought they were getting. So, you know, I just think this is the right direction given all of this, all of these different conditions that are at play, you know, all around the world. So I yield my time as well. So let's take a quick break and we'll hear a word from our sponsor. Then we'll be back with another piece of strange news.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
And we have returned, fellow conspiracy realist. This one threw me for a bit of a loop, and it's kind of why I was foreshadowing Gattaca just a little bit here. We are living in an exciting time. Good science fiction, as we always say, is only fiction for a certain interval before it becomes factual. Right now, as we're recording, we want to wish a very happy, very belated birthday to the first child in the United Kingdom born with three parents.
Wow.
Yep. Genetically three. Yeah. He's got the mom. He's got the dad, a five-month-old biological male, and has another mom. And this might sound like the kid is a chimera, you know, in the human species, Chimera describes where a single individual might have different DNA in different parts of their body. It's winning a very weird lottery. It's quite rare, but those people can live full lives. Here's what happened. This kid might have had, was under kind of a dark cloud. As they were developing in their mother's womb, doctors realized the kid might suffer from a mitochondrial disease. This can spell doom for children. Doctors took an unprecedented step and said, hey, what if we can do something to remove that bad mitochondrial DNA and slot in something else? This DNA is not evenly split. It's not a, you know, like 33.3% each parent kind of thing. Instead, the majority of the DNA comes from the two parents, and about 0.1% comes from a third person, a donor, a woman. And the idea is that mitochondrial DNA can be replaced via this donor using IVF, in vitro fertilization. And you can read some great articles on this in the BBC. The news just broke as we're recording today, May 10th, 2023. Shout out to James Gallagher, and shout out to all the other journalists who have been reporting this. First off, first question, would you all consider doing this? Not just us on the show today, but us listening along at home. Would you all consider inviting a third person to donate DNA to your child if it prevented a disease?
Yeah, I think this is an amazing breakthrough. Absolutely.
Agreed. Same.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. I'm glad it's not controversial.
Well, because it's going to be, like you said, Ben, the tiniest amount of that person is going to be in your child. So I think that would be the biggest thing, you know, for me personally, yeah. Like having a child where it's like either the mother's egg or the father's sperm, is one of them's not viable, and then you still want to have a baby. That's tougher for me, just personally. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's a no-brainer. If you can prevent like diseases that you know are potentially present.
Right, and it's not important point there, Matt. It's not altering the appearance of the child, of the issue, you would call it, if it's nobility. But the question still brings up a lot of weird stuff. And one of the things that we haven't talked about at length on the show in over the years, it's unbelievable, is just how weird mitochondria is. Mitochondria, back in the day, was a bacteria. So mitochondria is a stranger in a strange land, to quote Hyland. Once upon a time, it was completely separate from the human body. And of course, if you grew up in the West, the number one thing you know about mitochondria is it's, quote, the powerhouse of the cell, right? Did you guys hear that too in biology?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm obviously not a geneticist or a biologist of any stripe, but it always consistently blows my mind to think about these little bugs inside of us that are so dang smart.
But yeah, there are thousands of them per cell. Mm-hmm. You're right, Ben. They're like tiny little batteries. They're just hanging out, making sure your cells got what they need.
So shout out to Thomas Cavalier Smith, who in 2006 wrote a paper with the title, you ready? Origin of Mitochondria by Intercellular Enslavement of a Photosynthetic Purple Bacterium.
Wow.
So, Dr. CS is not pulling punches here. First line of the abstract is, mitochondria originated by permanent enslavement of purple non-sulfur bacteria. I don't think that's the thing a lot of people want to consider, you know, when you think about your own body. But we've already talked about how the body is a universe or a city of its own, and your human cells are vastly outnumbered by all the bacterial cells. I am 100% on board with this treatment, and I'm glad that it sounds like all of us on the show here are as well, because there's a plot twist. This is the first child born in the UK with three parents. The actual first child born by this technique dates back to 2016, when a Jordanian family had the same treatment in the United States, also to save their child. So it's still cost prohibitive, but it's real. The science fiction of designer babies is no longer science fiction. And it got me thinking of a world in which you can kind of choose how many parents or what traits you want to have for a kid. There's a great documentary about this on Netflix, a series, I should say, episode 4 of Unnatural Selection. For anyone who wants to learn more, it has this scene. I think it starts with a scene where there's a doctor in Ukraine who's doing the IVF procedure to help stave off mitochondrial disease from this kid and replace that tiny bit of mitochondrial DNA. And it opens with him saying something like, okay, now this is my favorite part. I'm using the laser. Obviously, this is everybody's favorite part. And props to the makers of that show. But it's a great place to learn about this. And the way they like to phrase it is not necessarily three parents. That's more a news headline. They like to phrase it as babies with donated mitochondria. And there are some researchers, leading edge experts, who are talking about this stuff. And in their conversations, both in the studies they published and in their interviews that are more for the general public, they've said things like, if we were talking about this 100 years from now, you would find it offensive for me to say we shouldn't have designer children or designer babies. And I keep going back to it. It's
like, why would we subject them to the cruelty of nature if we could do something to prevent it?
Right. Look how, hey, how about this? This is a very base comparison, but look how popular character customization is in your favorite video games. People already pay extra to alter the appearance of the things they create. And I don't see how human species would, examples of the human species would be any different. You know, there's a world in which it becomes kind of like the options when you buy a car. Certain things start as options and then they become factory standard, like seatbelts. You know, what if, I mean, obviously anybody, most people, I would say, who are going to have a child, if given the opportunity to genetically alter that child in a way that maybe reduces likelihood of cancers, reduces likelihood of dementia, or addresses some kind of genetic condition, if they're given that ability, most people will say yes, unless they're spiritually or ideologically opposed to the concept in general. But at this point, we have to ask, hopefully without sounding like a broken record, do you guys think this is part of an inevitable trend, or do you think it'll stay here, just mitochondrial donation?
I think it's going to go as far as it's possible for it to go. You know, I don't think progress is ever going to be intentionally stymied. If someone's going to be out there working under the radar, figuring out how to push it further. Have you all heard of this new Amazon series, Dead Ringers?
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the David Cronenberg film from, I think, the late 80s, early 90s, starring Jeremy Irons as like twin gynecologists. And it's, you know, it's a dark, twisted kind of horror sci-fi thing about, you know, genetic manipulation and about implanting infertile women with children and all of the God complex that can go into that. So it's sort of like a really nihilistic Gattaca in some ways. But the series, I've only seen the first two episodes, and it tackles this stuff head on, the dark side of it, but also the like positive side of it, and like, you know, what the I guess benevolent version of what this is. But inevitably you're going to have these bad actors who just want to figure out how to make a bunch of money on it and have it be only for the super elite. So I'm looking forward to seeing where the series goes, but it made me think of that immediately.
Yeah. It's creating a new caste system potentially, right? Such that there is the potential for a world in which the top couple percentage points of humanity are faster, smarter, stronger, longer lived, less prone to disease, to the point where you could make an argument that speciation begins. Speciation being when an origin species starts to diverge due to environmental pressures into two separate kind of organisms. And this goes pretty far. I mean, it's part of evolution, but it gets to the point where those two formerly related things can no longer even interbreed. Also, we should say the fancy name for this, if you want to put a tie on it, is pronuclear transfer. And it's controversial because wrapped up in the process, you have to destroy some embryos. So you
gotta break a few eggs to make an omelet.
Quite literally, just so.
Wow.
Yeah, so people are against it for that reason. If you want to read some of the work of the experts, you're going to look at people like Professor Doug Turnbull, who heads the center in Newcastle that pioneered a lot of this research. And you guys know I've been going through a kick of obscure research from days of yore, the stuff that just got kind of proven in concept and then never really followed through due to one concern or another. I'm thinking specifically about brain surgery on the octopus. Still, someone do it. Someone smarter than us, do it. We need a 58-year-old octopus. I think they could make it to 60.
100%. I mean, you know, one would like to believe.
Oh, I wonder what they would say. But this, right. They would speak in chromatoform.
Definitely would.
Yeah. But the point that you're making, Noel, about the money factor, the fees associated, those could be a huge, huge chasm for humanity to cross. Just like you were saying earlier, Matt, regarding the replacement of jobs, right, with algorithms. I don't know what the next iteration of human society is going to look like, but it does seem that right now we have all the ingredients to make a really good civilization, a really cool one, or all the ingredients to just roll it down a pavement of good intentions all the way to extinction. And at this point, I don't know. I guess we'll just keep doing our show. We'll do our show, see how it goes. As long as natural-born podcasters, meatbags can be around, right?
Guys, speaking of meatbags.
Yes.
Okay.
Doesn't it blow your minds that
our meat sacks?
In this realm, wherever it is, this place is that we exist.
Meat helmets.
You got two different of these humans. They have different downstairs bits. All they have to do is rub those bits together for a while until
that's oversimplifying it a little bit.
Well, until both of their internal bits attached to those other bits eject a thing, a tiny, tiny bit of DNA, and those little bits just have to touch in the right way. And then all of a sudden,
sex ed, Matt.
They make a whole entire human.
Well, see, guys,
this isn't. How is that real?
Well, it's funny you say that, Matt, because for any, you know, I've often called the lottery a tax on being bad at math, which is what it is.
Sure.
But if you think about it, maybe we end it this way. Let's end with two positive things. To your point, Matt, first, anytime you're feeling down, remember that you are the winner of a lottery that is way more difficult than any Powerball you could imagine. Right. Think of all the decisions that led to you. You know what I mean? It's kind of inspiring. The odds were against you and you're here. And then second, maybe a little out of character and emotive for me, if you're ever feeling really down, you know, looking at yourself in the mirror, remember that your face is inherently made up of all the faces of all your ancestors, all the people who liked that some version of your face enough to fall in love and reproduce. Or reproduce. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's just they rub the bits together. They're, you know.
I mean, but hey, don't take away from the poetry there. That's a nice ending. Like,
I'm just saying that's all you have yourself. To do.
You got over the hard part.
You just rub the bits together and it happens sometime.
You got over the hard part. You got over the most traumatic event of your life, which is being born. We are glad you are here. We can't wait to hear what you think about this.
Oh, can I say something before you close it out? I just have to add, it reminds me of the lyrics to the a really wonderful Monty Python song from The Meaning of Life. It says, just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. It's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned that the sun is the source of all our power, etc. It goes on and it goes on, talks about the universe, but then it says, so remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth, and pray that there's intelligent life somewhere out in space, because there's bugger all down here on Earth. That's all.
And before we go out, I just want to reiterate again, if you're feeling down, life is increasingly difficult all around. But if you are feeling down, remember, you've already won the lottery. You're here. We're glad you're here. We cannot wait to hear from you. And we try to be easy to find online.
We do. Doesn't require any kind of genetic lottery system at all.
So far.
You can, no, well, yeah. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitter. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Hey, do you like phones? Give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STWYTK. When you call in, you've got 3 minutes to leave a voicemail. Start the clock as soon as you hear that beep. Let us know what your code name is. Let us know if we can use that name and your message on the air. If you'd rather not talk on the phone, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.